Welcome to the Round 16 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week I'm joined again by FB Donkey.
G'day everyone, how you going?
And we've got special guest Faz back again with us this week.
Hey guys.
Thanks for joining us again this week, Faz. Looking forward to cracking into a great show. It'll be a short one this week. There's not too many questions popping up on social media, but we'll run it through anyway, and hopefully it's of some value to
you. I think you just want to host the show today so you can talk about your team, mate, and your results from the weekend.
That's right. I'm pretty happy if we just spend like 10 minutes of the show doing that. Been a good weekend of results, Supercoach-wise. Walker was a little bit of a letdown in the final game, but like, can't really complain. But we're shooting for 2,700, finished with 2,654. And yeah, that shot me up again to 128th. So I've been making pretty steady progress for about 5 weeks now, and it feels like the team has some genuine scoring power. So I hope it can keep it up. Upwards and onwards, hopefully. I haven't cracked the top 100 finish yet, and I seem to falter about this time every year, and saying it has seemed to jinx myself every year, but hopefully it doesn't happen, and yeah, I can finally crack that top 100. How'd you guys go?
You're on a tear, mate. You should be aiming for top 30, top 20 maybe, the way your team's going at the moment.
Yeah, well, anything can happen, as they say. So top 100, I'll keep it at that for now. That'll already be a personal best, so I'm not going to be too greedy.
My team was actually going really, really well. I was looking at 2,600 plus as well. And then on Sunday, I had Walker 48, Libba 65, and Murphy 73, just all way below average. So, and Jentsch 58. So that just completely ruined the weekend. Lost about 150, 200 points from those guys, and hence the score of 2502. And I dropped slightly to 740th overall. And based on that and the way that some of my players are going, I might struggle to get into even the top 500 from here.
You might be starting to hate those Sundays, Mark. They haven't been panning out very nicely for you the last, 3 weeks now.
That's true, and Friday nights have been horrible to me, except for the Geelong game this week. 3 weeks in a row, I'd started off terribly as well, which sort of ruins your weekend. And this week, my Supercoach team started off really well with the Bartels, Selwood and Johnsons, but unfortunately the Bombers lost on Friday night, which tends to ruin the weekend a little bit.
So where you ranked again, Mark, sorry?
740th, mate, and I'm off to Adelaide this week to check out the new Adelaide Oval and watch Port versus the Bombers.
Nice. Hopefully the interstate trip brings you a bit of luck then. That's still not too bad. I mean, to be having average weeks and at about the 700 mark. I was having average weeks and about the 1,000 mark not too long ago. So yeah, as long as those premiums stop faltering, you'd hope Libba gets back to good scoring after Griffin gets back, hopefully this week for you. Yeah.
Do you know if they have internet in Adelaide? I might need to change my...
I'm hoping you're on Telstra, mate. You might need the phone connectivity over there.
Satellite phone?
Yeah. Faz, how'd you go for the weekend?
Yeah, I wasn't too far behind you, mate. Scored a 26-21 this week, so I was very happy with that. Nice. I think I've still yet to score a 2,500 for the year, but I'll take it if it's going to be 2,600s instead. Traded Selwood into the team, so that was a handy little score for his first round in. I was absolutely thrilled with Cochin's score, 168, after we were talking him down last show. Also Fife in there, so yeah, pretty good scores all around. Pavlich, you know, obviously a bit of a letdown, and Suckling is sucking. Pardon that. That's pretty awful. Sorry about that, guys. Overall, pretty happy with the side. Maybe looking at trading in a bit of bench coverage this week, which we'll get to a bit later in the show. The overall rank is now up to 1309, so slowly creeping my way towards top 1,000. That's my goal for now.
Almost there, mate. We'll move on to the questions now from social media again. Thank you for those at SupercoachCoach and facebook.com/SupercoachCoach. Keep them coming throughout the season. First question this week is from Scott McNaughton of Facebook, and he's asking how many trades to hold on to or to keep your trades for backup options. He only has 4 trades left. So we've actually talked about this over a few shows now, but we're still getting quite a few number of questions about it. So we'll just go through briefly. I think with 4, I'm of the opinion that you should probably just sit on that. With 8 rounds to go, do you guys agree with that or disagree?
Depends on what your goal is. I do agree that 4 you should sit on, whether it's a league team or an overall team, but especially in a league team, you'd be more inclined to sit on it. I mean, overall, depending on what your goal is, you could just keep going for it potentially.
I think if you know you're going to make the top four in the finals, you can pretty much stop trading if you have less than eight trades. Ideally, you'd have two trades for every week of the finals. So as long as you know you can make the top four, that should probably be your strategy if you're really concentrating on winning some cash in a league. Faz, what's your strategy with overall? I know you're not in any cash leagues this year.
Yeah, I've been going a bit slower on the trade, so I still got six left at the moment. Have pretty much just been using them as required. It's kind of stopped that period where you were making the two trades every week. So I think there was one week a couple ago where I didn't do any trades. I'm just kind of going with injuries and those sort of things. So kind of not forcing any upgrades now. I guess my philosophy is kind of reflected, I guess, a bit with Cochin's score on the weekend. He'd been a bit out of form and, you know, I could have been tempted to trade him out then. But, you know, obviously there's a reason you pick the guys in the first place, and you'd really be kicking yourself if you trade someone out and then they have a big score, really saving the trades for forced trades rather than, you know, convenient upgrades.
Considering you didn't take probably a more aggressive approach, which would be to correct it sooner, you're sitting outside the top 1,000 looking to pounce in with the extra two trades that you might have over these people that have four trades left. How are you planning to use that? Are you planning to use that aggressively, or are you planning to use that for injuries as they pop up?
My issue is a bit with my bench coverage. I'm kind of spread quite thin at the moment. I think on the weekend, Cam Shenton was my only playing bench player. So I'm a little bit cautious to go too hard on the trading, you know, unless it's fixing any of my bench issues. A lot of my guys have got long-term injuries. I've got Joel Tippett, Blake Akers, he must be coming back pretty soon, but Billy Harton, guys like that are not going to be playing anytime soon. So I don't want to go too aggressive on a sideways swap of a premium, kind of more tempted to maybe shore up a defensive spot or maybe, you know, bring in a bit more DPP to get myself around things.
You think you'd be using a trade then this week maybe to actually play with your bench?
Yeah, I'm looking at Zach Jones, who we'll talk about in a bit. Looks like a reasonable option down back. And then also Mitch Honeychurch could be pretty handy with his forward midfield link.
So is that just two rookie sideways trades?
Potentially, yeah.
I reckon most of the time there, if I had six trades, I would just wait for the need to use one. And when it came up, I would just use one to cover rather than bring in a pretty average rookie and then get their 50 on the score as cover. If you can just get premium to premium, make that trade when you need it, I reckon you're going to get more value out of it via that.
We'll move on to the next question now from Dunny at PKD73, and he's asking about Jentsch. So, Mark, you actually have him in your team. Do you stick with Jentsch, or is he a player that you consider spending a trade on in the hope that you might make, you know, 20 points per game for the run home?
Good question. I'd like to know your guys' opinions, actually, because I don't know what to do. He's just turned out much more poorly than I was hoping. Henderson, a chance to come back in the next couple of weeks. He'll probably play sample this week, which might take even more rebounding role. He's definitely become more of a defensive player in the last few weeks compared to where he was playing earlier in the season, which is quite disappointing. Adelaide should win a few more games, so he might score okay. He's shown he can get the 120s this year, so I'd be hoping from some really good things. But yeah, definitely a concern in Jentsch. Definitely a big concern. And at the time, Hanley was the same price, and he scored 160 on the weekend. So that was a bit of a sliding doors moment.
Faz, what do you reckon about Jentsch? Is he somebody that you would consider at value for that price with your six trades?
Probably not, no. He's, to me, seems like a similar boat to Suckling, that like tier below the real premiums that are on offer in the back line. So, you know, there's quite a few out there. Obviously, if you discount value, then you've got, you know, already Jimmy Bartel, Swallow, McVeigh, Malcheski scoring great. As you said, Hanley had a huge one on the weekend, so there's enough good options and only six spots in your back line. I wouldn't be filling one of them with Jentsch if I was making a trade. In terms of whether I would trade Jentsch out, again, it's about looking for value, I guess. You don't want to just be, as we spoke about last week, you don't want to be spending heaps to get Cade Simpson when he's at top dollar or anything. But if there's a guy that's not too far off, what's Jentsch? He's about 380,000, isn't he?
385. I think the sort of player that you're talking about might be Mitchell, who there's been reports today that he could even play on Friday night. If he plays a couple of games, he's going to drop significantly in price. And if he gets down to that 420 sort of mark, then maybe a Jentsch to Mitchell swap might be a good idea.
I'll keep my eyes on Mitchell's price, definitely, in terms of a Suckling sideways.
Mitchell fits the bill in terms of a player that you want to bring in because he has high scoring potential with his midfield time. With only 6, 7, 8 weeks to run, you want to be getting players that you can hope will knock a big score out of the park, I think. You want to try and catch the players on a big run home, and Mitchell is certainly a candidate for that. Next question we've got here is from @Sajaldo on Twitter, and he's asking about Ablett this week, and talking about the captaincy options. We're pretty thin on topics. Asking whether McCaffrey will actually be able to stop him this week. There was an article even on afl.com.au saying that Ablett will be a focus for Collingwood this week. What do you guys reckon? Will you still give him the vice-captaincy, captaincy?
I'm pretty sure that Ablett would be a target every week. For every team that plays the Gold Coast. So I don't think that's necessarily groundbreaking. I think the reason why that comes up is because he does have a sick record against the Pies. I know last year when they didn't tag him and he just ran riot, and I think the year before he ran riot against him, and he's had over 40 twice in a row. But Ablett still could, especially at home at Metricon, in a game that they could win, he could easily score 130+, even on the best tagger in the league at the moment. So yeah, I'll be sticking the VC on Gadge, I think.
At least give him a chance to score well against McCaffer. And then, you know, if you've done the VC loophole, at least you've got other options out there. Gold Coast plays Saturday Arvo, so there's still quite a few teams to play. You don't, you know, limit your options too much.
I think it'll be Ablett into Fife for me, and hoping Fife goes big against Melbourne. All right, next question, and it's from Paul O'Connell on Twitter. He's asking about Cochin. So we've talked about him every week now, but really, really surprised me. Did not see such an explosive game coming out of Cochin. I thought that in order for him to score a lot of goals, the team has to put him in that opportunity. And I think I just said that a couple of weeks ago, and then he went out and kicked
balls. You reckon Damien Hardwick's listening to the show, mate?
I don't know, 4 goals in the first quarter, was it? Was just nuts. So absolutely huge score, and obviously bottomed out, gone up 30K because of that. Mark, what's your take on Koch?
He had 23 possessions in the first half the week before. So as of last week, there were signs that this could possibly happen. Richmond do have an unbelievable draw. Cochin has gone on runs before of 10 games where he's averaged 120+. So yeah, I mean, he did die out in the game before, just in the end when Richmond died off. And we might see a bit more of that from Richmond because they are so up and down. And he was only playing the Saints on the weekend, so you don't want to read too much into it, I think. I think I'd still be pretty wary of bringing him in. I mean, he presents a ton of value. If you're really struggling for a midfielder around that price, it doesn't seem terrible to bring him in given their draw. If they didn't have a draw like that, then he'd be a big no. But yeah, the fact that it's been a couple of weeks now, I think, is enough to say that maybe he can hit a bit of form. And look, I think that Cochi will come good. He's 24. He's had the pressure of being captain for a couple of years, and it's a bit of a learning curve for most players. And I think in 4 years' time, we'll be looking back and saying, wow, Cochi is a really excellent captain and player for the Richmond Footy Club.
I think I still wouldn't be bringing him in because the goals played a big part in his score, and he's not known to be a consistent goal kicker, so I would still hold off. We've got a question here about Dane Swan, guys. Matt Farina is asking about Swan. He hasn't tunned up since he acquired him after their bye. What will you guys do with Dane Swan?
Yeah, well, I've got Swan in my side. Also very disappointed with how he's been scoring since I brought him in. The issue is, as he mentions, with hashtag lost 100K, like Dane Swan's only at 450,000 now. So there's,
wow,
even going to Cochin costs you best part of 50 grand. And I had a look around. The only player really that I'd look at that's, you know, not too far away is Steve Johnson, who's kind of low 500s. But really, a lot of the guys that you want in your midfield are up around the 600,000 mark. So that's a lot of money to try and come up with at this point in the season. And yeah, I don't know. It probably means 2 trades. And I guess I'm sitting here with my head in the sand, hoping that another Cochin situation happens, that he'll just come good at some point and repay the faith.
I think if I had an opportunity to cash out for some money in your situation with 6 trades, Faz, then I probably would consider upgrading Swan to one of those premiums. But like I said, if you don't have any money, or if you're running 5 or less trades, it's probably too late to be upgrading someone like that.
I think concur with your thoughts there, Mark. Move on to the question from Dom Dunn now. He's asking about Zach Jones. So Fari flagged him before. Maybe you can give us a little bit of a rundown about Zach Jones from Sydney.
got a chance at work today to take a few notes on Zach Jones. He was the 15th pick in last year's draft, younger brother of the captain of Melbourne, Nathan Jones, an elite youngster, obviously, going so high in the draft. So far this year, he, in his first game, came on as the sub after halftime and I think got some praise from the coach, did a really good job, picked up 9 disposals and 6 tackles for 65 Supercoach points. Had his first full game against GWS, 13 disposals and kicked a goal, but only ended up getting 49 Supercoach. There are a few issues that I've seen. One seems to be that he's probably competing with Tom Mitchell for a spot in the side, who's been in some pretty good form in the NEAFL. We probably all saw that article about him getting 64 disposals and 4 goals. He still hasn't broken back into the side since his ankle injury earlier in the year. So, you know, he's still there pressing his case. Also, Hannabury and Shaw are both injured. So while Jones might keep his spot in the side for another couple of weeks, I'd say Sydney will get their side, you know, cherry ripe for the finals. They might rest a few guys, but I'd say they want to be getting, you know, Hannabury and Shaw back into the side. There's some other guys like LRT and a few others that have been out of the side. I'd say there's a bit of a risk that he gets forced out of the side. And also he's not that basement price. He's $147,000. He was one of the high draft picks. So there's not been too many good defensive options for rookies this year. But the value of a trade at this point in the year, it might be better served if you just hold off and save a trade for like an injury rather than trading in Zach Jones just for bench coverage.
Good advice, Buzz.
Cheers.
Yeah, I think I'd echo that. And no need to add too much more. So Darren Fowler's question now from Facebook, and he's looking for a replacement for Cyril Rioli. So he's looking at Park at the moment, who's pretty much right at the bottom, going to go up in price now. 60 cycled out of his price and pretty decent scores, 120 and 116, I believe, in his last two. His other alternative to Parker is Lacroix, which is a little bit more left field. So thoughts on those guys?
I got Parker in my side, had him since pretty early in the season. Absolutely love having him in my team. I think he's a great pickup at that price. I think his scores in the last 2 weeks are a bit inflated, though. I don't think it's a coincidence that he has returned to some really good scoring with Hannabury at the side. I think that his lower scores really are a lot to do with what role he's allowed to play on the ground, and this extra midfield time has been a huge benefit to him. But Sydney have a decent draw. Parker's a super player. I'm pretty sure he has a really good durability history, so it seems like a pretty easy swap to me.
Yeah, I've also got Parker, and I'd just echo Mark's thoughts there. I'd be jumping on if he didn't have him. The only other one I'd throw out there as another left field option would be Luke Dalhouse. Had a pretty handy score on the weekend and is at $450,000, so a bit closer to Cyril's price if money's an issue and you can't get to Parker. Dalhouse is one that I'd be recommending.
He looks like a good buy, Faz. I think I'd prefer Parker just because of the MPP, but Dalhouse might even match or has the potential to beat Parker on the run home. Like you said, Parker is a little bit constrained by his role and he isn't the highest ranked midfielder at Sydney, so he does get pushed around a little bit. And you think as they move toward finals, his midfield time might drop off a little bit. Not sure if that will pan out, but there is that potential there. What do you guys actually reckon about Lacroix? Didn't get thoughts on him. He scored 109 on the weekend and averaging 92 for the year. Seems to be getting enough disposals to get his score up. So obviously floating a bit through the midfield or getting the possessions up on that half forward flank. Is it flash in the pan or can he keep it up?
I don't see any reason why he's a whole lot of better of a pick than Bruce, who also a bit up and down, but kicking lots of goals, gets to a lot of centre bounces. So they seem like similar-ish picks, and they seem probably a bit below that premium level. Like Parker could average 100 easily, whereas Lacroix would probably struggle to get to 100 average, and he has a durability history.
Yeah, I don't like the idea of going Cyril Rioli to Lacroix. It sounds like a bad omens to me.
Probably pretty sound, actually. The other one to mention is Chad Wingard. Now, he's really cheap. He's coming off a terrible score, so he's still...
Terrible score.
His break-even's 104, though, so it's very, very achievable for him. And he's only scored under 73 times this year, 53, 10, and 42.
Only three times. You wouldn't really want any forward in your side scoring below 70 if you could avoid it.
Most of the time, he scores about the 90 to 100 mark. And when I say most of the time, it is about 60 to 70% of the time. So if you can bring him in as a bench player, he's one that might be a really good selection, because as long as you can loophole him and keep off the terrible games, he should be pretty solid for 100 score every other week. He just has the occasional poor game where he doesn't quite get into it, but...
No, you're right. He has been pretty consistent this year. I think the one tricky part about having Wingard in your team is that he never scores points before halftime. He just waits till the last quarter every week, which is really frustrating for owners.
Another really risky pick would be Jack Riewoldt at 400K.
Our good mate Hawker, all over Jack, reckons he's a good pick with their draw.
Is it Smokey for you guys? Feeling like a little bit of a roll of the dice? Yeah, that's probably enough for that question, and we'll move on to the last question from this week, and it's from Tim again from Twitter. Thanks for your questions each week, Tim. And he's asked us if we watched Bontempelli's goal. He reckons it was the goal of the year. Do you guys enjoy that? See that?
Definitely saw it. Goal of the year by far. I don't want to see any of these. Eddie Betts kicks one from 40 out, check side, getting goal of the year. He beat four players to get the ball for himself, snapped it from the pocket to win them the game. Like, it was a sick goal. Yeah, definitely deserves goal of the year by a long way.
Just saw the replays, so I guess I wasn't caught up in the moment of the game as much as, you know, you would have been if you saw it live. The one that I would just put up there as another contender, not saying it's better, but Chad Wingard kicked one a few weeks ago where I just love the way he kind of gawked around about four guys before he took his shot. Not the same kind of, you know, match-winning moment though, so probably got to give it to Bontz.
Yeah.
Bontz, he's already got a nickname for the show, does he?
Crazy to think that he's already doing that and he's not even played. Well, he's played less than five games.
He kicked a goal like 2 minutes before that as well. So he kicked two to win them the game.
So it's another tall midfielder. So I expect he'll be dominating headlines for a little while yet. With that, I think that wraps up this week's show.
I appreciate you not discussing the Geelong Essendon game tonight, Marcus.
Yeah, no worries, guys. Didn't want to rub the salt in the wounds. Yeah. I'll just quietly enjoy that one for the week.
He wasn't so quiet on Friday night, I can tell you that.
It was a pretty exciting finish, to be fair.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. All right, best of luck for this week, guys. And if you're making any trades, I hope they go well for you and you catch those big runs on the way home. See ya.
Good luck, guys. See ya.
See ya. See ya.